Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, 12 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock, 13 minutes actually. Lovely to have you with us on this Thursday, the 30th of November. 30 days, half September, April, June, and November. So here we are, the final day of November, and we have one more month to go. And we are thrilled that you are spending the final day of this month with us. Good morning, and let me introduce our panel to you, and then we'll get busy and talk about all of the topics. Time of the tone, 9:13. Joining us,
fasten
we have WAMC's Alan Shartok. Good morning.
Hello.
Fasten your safety belts. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
And speaking of which, I want to tell you what I learned yesterday. Is that okay?
What did you learn yesterday?
Tell. Well, I put 4 snow tires on my Prius because I wanted to, you know. And I found that the car was wandering a little bit. You know, you hold it just a little bit. You'd hold your hand on the thing.
It didn't have good handling.
Somebody did not balance.
Yes,
is that it?
Yeah, it was sort of like you had to continually make a little correction here and there.
Does that have anything to do with rack and pinion steering, which I have no idea what that is, but I just like saying rack and pinion steering.
No, that was all checked out.
Okay.
So what my wonderful Prius people did was to put 4 extra pounds in each tire. And it went away.
Oh, pounds of what?
In other words, it stabilized because the pressure in the tires were what were called for, but they went 4 pounds over what was called for, and now the car drives beautifully.
Hmm.
Sometimes there are simple solutions, which I thought I'd pass on to all our colleagues out there in Radio Land.
Interesting.
But don't do it unless you talk to your physician first.
Please consult with your tire professional.
That's like the people who spent millions of dollars trying to find the right pen that would work in space, and the Russians use a pencil.
Yeah, that's good. You know, as you say this, my wife right now is getting our snow tires on right now,
yes.
This very moment.
Now, what kind of car is that?
A Subaru.
They're great.
All-wheel drive.
Wonderful cars.
Yeah. So I'll text her and make sure she gets the right tire pressure because I'm sure she never thought that. That's not true. Professor of Political Science at Siena College, Vera Akarios-Kelly is with us. Good morning, Vera. Lovely to have you here. Good morning. Thank you. Nice to be back. And communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois is with us. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. I came back for another beautiful day.
Yes. Good job. Very nice.
How about that?
We just like that you come back. That's impressive. That's nice.
Well, somebody said they liked my laugh, so that was
they
very sweet.
Did.
How
yes,
about that? That know, was
lovely.
Very
and
nice.
Boy, were they right.
All right. Well, good morning, and let's get to it and start talking about what's happening in the world. And there's a lot of places that we can start. But let us begin, I guess, perhaps the place that we should begin is with the story that is closest to home, which is the story about Garrison Keillor being fired by Minnesota Public Radio. Just here's a little bit of a setup on the story and tell you a little bit what happened yesterday. But the whether you know it or not, as a listener, we don't hire Garrison Keillor. We pay a service, in this case, Minnesota Public Radio.
A lot of money.
A lot of money. That service that provides that show, in this case, which was Prairie Home Companion and now is just Writer's Almanac, but also includes Prairie Home Companion with Chris Thiele. So we were notified around midday yesterday that NPR, not NPR, but M as in Mary, or as in Minnesota, Minnesota Public Radio said that it's severing its ties with Garrison Keillor. They are going to stop production and have stopped production of all of his programs. So the Writer's Almanac is no longer. We've received a lot of letters of people saying, "How dare you? I'm never going to give you another dime because you have stopped putting Writer's Almanac on." Okay, but we can't because it doesn't exist anymore. So they're not making it, and we can't air it. So that's one thing.
And can I just interrupt for a
Absolutely.
Second to say I love that program, and it's one of the things on WAMC that I always want to be around to listen to. So I'm real ticked off that it's not there anymore. I mean, I'm personally frustrated that we can't hear that show anymore. But we can't. It's the way it is.
Do you think he'll create it elsewhere?
I don't know. I mean, I think I'm not speaking to Keillor's character. I'm telling you that I think the man has a real genius for the way he presents his material and how good he is. And I don't know that there will be another person who can do that. Nevertheless, they apparently, and Joe will tell you about this, hired a special investigator, Minnesota Public Radio, which came back and led them to basically discharge him, although he has given a different story. He said he was standing next to a woman. She had just complained about a tough life or something like that, and he put his hand down her dress. As if, you know, that's what happens. And then in justifying it, he said, "I wish I had a dollar." Joe, do you remember the exact quote? "I wish I had a dollar."
Yeah, I'll find
okay.
it.
I wish I'll paraphrase it. "I wish I had a dollar for everybody I ever took a selfie with who put their arm around my waist and put their hands under my belt. I would have $100 right now," he said, unquote. And I've been getting calls from a lot of people saying, "What's wrong with that?" So there you are. Now, our particular problem was that yesterday we were, of all days, co-sponsoring an event at the Colonial Theater run by the great Kate McGuire, who we love. It wasn't her program. She was renting the hall to a couple of developers. And I should point out who are being underwriting on our air during that time. So we had then the question as to whether we should continue our affiliation with them, with the show, and we decided no, we're not going to go because you know, as Kaylin Brown said this morning, what would I tell my daughter? It is a very tough thing, and people are angry, but the people to be angry about, if anybody, are either at Garrison or at the people at Minnesota Public Radio.
There was a Facebook post that he put up that and it's astonishing that 50 years of hard work can be trashed in a morning by an accusation. I always believed in hard work and now it feels sort of meaningless. Only a friend can hurt you this badly. I think I have to leave the country in order to walk around in public and not feel accusing glances. He put that up and then immediately took it down.
I hadn't seen that one.
He deleted deleted it right away.
He seems pretty upset.
So I just a couple of things before we leave this topic, and that is number one, the complete statement from Minnesota Public Radio is on our website. If you go to WAMC.org and you look, the statement from Minnesota Public Radio is on there. People have asked, the information is there also to notify them if you have a letter in support or not in support of their decision, or you want to find out more information. There is a way of reaching out to them, and otherwise, in the meantime, there is a kind of a 2-week plan to. You won't be hearing Writer's Almanac here. As I said, it's not being made anymore, but there is a new module that's being provided, and then they're going to figure out what they're going to do next, as we will figure out what, you know, if their new program is something that we want to take. So that's where we are. Mm-hmm. The other thing I thought was interesting, too, but Prairie Home Companion with Chris Thiele, who is the new host of Prairie Home Companion, they said, we're also not only are we going to we'll keep that show, but we're not going to call it Prairie Home Companion anymore. We're going to just call it the Chris Thiele Show. So mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. has been been done as well.
Now, Joe, one of the things that I found very interesting was I think I heard it on NPR this morning. It may have been on the BBC, but I think it was NPR. Was a discussion in which they said that the intellectual property parts of all things Garrison Keillor's work are his property. So MPR, Minnesota Public Radio, can't just have somebody else do it because all of those terms on both shows belong to him. So he
owns the name Prairie Home Companion.
He does, as well as Lake Wobegon and various other
exactly.
You know, terms. As a former resident of Minnesota, I'm quite familiar with the locations, with the stories, and I have to say, never was a big fan.
Wow. Well, I always was a big fan, and I'm very unhappy. I'm very disappointed in all of this, and I must say. Once again, it does talk to all of us about what our responsibilities in this country are in terms of the way we treat each other.
True enough.
Did you want to weigh in or are you good?
I'm good.
Okay. We are again. You can. Oh, we have
here
letters.
Come the letters.
All right,
the letters.
Alan, do the letters, and we'll.
These are only a couple. They would have recoiled is the subject line, and it's from Patricia, who says, comments on Garrison Keillor's explanation, the men I know and trust in my life, my father, my brother, my husband, and son, would have not reached under someone's shirt while patting them on the back.
Correct.
If by accident they did so, they would have recoiled. Genius gets no free pass, and that's from Patricia.
Yep.
I mean, yeah.
Hi, panel, says Jesse. I am disappointed by the media's commentary surrounding the firing of both Matt Lauer and Garrison Keillor. There's a lot of poor Matt and poor Garrison sentiment being expressed as if something unfair or unfortunate happened to them. These are powerful men who abused women. And then there's a lot more, but I can't read it because it's too long.
I just have to say, though, that letter was one of the few that we got like that. Last night, most of the mail that we got was angry, and it was angry at us and angry at Minnesota Public Radio, angry at us for not being part of a concert which was canceled, but also...
And which, by the way, we knew was going to get canceled.
Yeah, it was going to get canceled, but also that that the program no longer existed. So, but I say that only because this view, at least in what we have gotten in the mail, is somewhat of an outlier.
Well, I'm sorry, Vera. I just want to read this just to make Joe's point.
Do it in the microphone. Yeah,
you're so right. This is what it's all about radio.
So they can hear
you. I know you knew it this hour.
They can hear you. It's even better.
Hello. Okay. Some lady stopped me, a very nice lady stopped me on the street last night and said, I love to laugh at you, Alan. Anyway, this comes from Cliff, who says, Keillor, I'm angry and dismayed at the action of Minnesota Public Radio and the Me Too stations who have thrown Garrison to the side for what appears to be a typical act of kindness and concern on his part. I am considering withholding support for the half dozen stations I donate over this to. And that's from Cliff, who we've heard from many times in the past.
Just two things on that. One is, and then I want to go to Vera on this, but one thing is the Me Too stations who have thrown Garrison to the side. Again, the stations have really no voting power in this. If they're no longer making the show and they've fired him, you're done.
Right.
I think it's important to note in this case that there is often these cases, as they have emerged, that there's a he said, she said, and I think it's important to note in this particular case, we have only heard the he said. We have not heard anything about the she said.
But
I think that's important to point out. We know what he said.
He said he. Put
well, I know. I know. As I said, we only have the he said. We don't know what the accusation
and
was.
We only know that a very specific letter from a law firm went to NPR.
NPR. Yeah, right.
And we are not privileged to get the information at this point. So I mean, there is more to the story, I believe, and we will probably find out something in the coming weeks.
I'm sure as they bow to with both the working with the victim, but also finding out what details will come out, because they are going to feel the heat as well. Alan.
Yeah, no, I'm just wondering whether when something like this happens, there isn't a public responsibility on the part of NPR. To sort of tell millions of people who love this guy why this is happening. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise you have to say,
well, I think they,
trust me, because that's all there is to it.
Well, I think they can, and I think they, and I agree with Vera, I think they will, but I also think in the meantime you have to protect the victim and see if there are more stories, and they are within an investigation, so see where it goes from there.
You know who I actually feel bad about in this particular case are all the musicians, are all the poets, are all the writers that relied on this show to be recognized and heard by the general public. And I think they're going to feel the consequences significantly.
You are so right. I have to say it again. It's a great show. it has been a great show all along. Because this guy made a terrible error doesn't mean that he isn't a genius at what he does.
Well, I think that that's, you know, one of the things I think we need to, I don't want to say shift to, but add on a layer of discussion about is, you know, what's next? Where do we go from here with all of this?
Sure.
And how do we have this not be, you know, again, I've said it, bump stock moment, have it be real change. One of the things that I've been talking with people about, I say, you know, I have no standing in this, but how do we keep the conversation going? How do you make sure that in February and March and April of next year, you still have people talking about this, not just telling their stories, but talking about what to do about it? Mm-hmm. What do you do when you have a situation where you have a powerful person who's making big contributions but also has bad behavior? And how can you change the culture and so that the institution doesn't come down with the, you know, if you know, what do you, how do you deal with this behavior? How do you stop it? How do you
Well, I mean, one of the things, Teresa, I think is important to think about is that all companies have transparency. Like Matt Lauer, for example, they didn't even have an HR office. He had his own sort of contracting fiefdom going on, and so there was no place to go to file a complaint. There were no support structures for any employee to actually express or describe what was happening. And some of those concerns are real. Every company should have very clear guidelines on what is appropriate and inappropriate conduct and what the consequences are.
We have to go to a break, but I the one thing I do want to mention just before we go is that you wonder about in the timing of these things. When it comes to Garrison Keillor, this comes the day after he wrote the Washington Post editorial in which he supported Senator Frank and wrote that this is pure absurdity and the atrocity it leads to is a code of public deadliness. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will we have a couple letters. We'll return to other subjects, and we will be back right after the short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. It is 35 minutes past 9 o'clock. We have letters.
We
we'll
do.
Go to those, and then we're going to move on from the
Getting along,
story.
I'm sorry, Joe. No, I stepped on you. Getting along, says Bob in Milford. Alan makes a good point about an environment where we can all get along and respect each other. Unfortunately, our political leaders are leading us into banana republicanism, where just the opposite is beginning to happen. Witness Donald Trump, Roy Moore, et cetera. By the way, sorry, but I will not miss the Morning Almanac. And Vera, you know, you're a professor of political science, and this letter goes right to your specialty, which is comparative politics and international relations. And one of the things here is he's saying are leading us into banana republicanism.
I mean, you know, we were just talking about this sort of broader issue during the break, how the entire atmosphere in this country is, you know, almost, I mean, some of us feel down, depressed, very negative. And I think the sort of lack of consultation with the general public on policies and these sort of shifts in policy and the tweets that are going on. I mean, this is banana republicanism. I mean, it's almost insulting to a banana republic.
But that's funny. But isn't it pre-fascism in so many ways. I mean, this is a specialty of yours. You have seen societies, historically and otherwise, which have gone from democracy into this terrible state of, you know, throwing red meat to a certain number of people in the masses. Hitler did it.
Well, I mean, this whole question with the Britain First tweet.
Oh, that's
tweet.
A great, that's
I
a
mean,
very
that
important
is
story.
One of those examples where it's just simply stunning that the President of the United States sends out or endorses a fringe group that in Britain is considered so fringe it's classified as neo-Nazi and so bizarre in terms of forwarding these videos that have been debunked, that are out of context, and to just then go after
Theresa May.
Yeah. I mean, this is supposed to be a country we have a very close relationship with. Now, Sadiq Khan, the Muslim mayor of London, is suggesting to disinvite Trump because he's been endorsing this sort of Islamophobic, aggressive tone.
And in fact, if you think about it, this is where she got a black eye, because in the beginning, Theresa May invited him over. And the public hated that. They didn't want him there. We heard stories, I don't know if they're apocryphal or not, that the Queen wouldn't meet him or whatever. But the general population really hated his guts. And now, in a way that this confrontation is going on, it actually helps her politically.
Maybe. I'm not sure, because she just was trying to sort of walk a middle path, critique Trump for endorsing this fringe Islamophobic group, yet at the same time reinforce the message that the UK and the US have a special relationship. Theresa May is desperate to have to be able to have a trade negotiation with the US if this Brexit EU negotiation, which is happening right now, is completely falling apart, and it looks very bad for her. I'm actually putting my bet is there's a 50% chance that Theresa May will not be prime minister by Christmas time.
No, I think you're right. I think she's got a big problem on her hands in terms of electoral victory. Yeah.
So this doesn't help her at all.
Can I just, and how did all of this then tie
I just
in?
Want to reserve to say I disagree with Vera, but I'll come back to that. Go
no,
ahead.
No,
I think I made
then
the
I want to bring up Germany.
No, I think I made the
That's
point.
Exactly.
That
bring up Germany.
That the general population in Great Britain hates Trump's guts, and therefore her confrontation with him puts her on a better position.
Yeah,
maybe
well,
not
maybe,
as a statesperson.
But because you know what they really care in the UK is an improved economy, and they're very worried about what's going on with the public in the UK has been misled. In regard to this Brexit vote, because it were promised that if they would withdraw from the EU, enormous amounts of money that were usually spent on EU fees would be redirected to the national health system, which of course is not happening, and the population is increasingly disillusioned. Now, the Labour Party is organizing in opposition of Theresa May, and they may push for a revote. I mean, there's some initiative in that direction, so we'll see.
I think a revote on Brexit.
Yeah. So I think there's a good chance, there's a reasonable chance, let's say, that Theresa May get a no confidence vote in the coming weeks.
How does this all fit in with Germany and Angela Merkel?
Well, Angela Merkel, she was in a bit of a pinch, obviously, because her Jamaica coalition that she was trying to put together fell apart when the libertarians walked away and they couldn't agree on with the Green Party and various other coalition partners. But now it looks like the old Grand Coalition might be coming back together, the Social Democrats and the Christian Democrats. So she may be able to put together a new coalition that basically stabilizes the country.
So what was that split between the Social and the Christian Democrats?
So basically, they had a coalition for the prior 4 years, right? And so they had the Social Democrats were slightly weaker than the Christian Democrats. But in this last round of elections, they had lost support, because if you are in a grand coalition, you really can't stand out as a different party that much. The Social Democrats wanted to go into opposition to rebuild and establish a different kind of policy. But I think they're all deciding that the stability of Germany in the center of Europe is more important than the immediate result.
So let me follow up. Let me follow up and then just ask you, because I'm trying to look at general trends in all of our countries. We have this nativist America First group here. We certainly have that in Germany.
The alternative for Germany, that's what they're called, right? Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we certainly have people who say, okay, enough with bringing immigrants here.
Mm-hmm.
She became my hero when she said, unlike everybody else, we're going to be a welcoming society for all kinds of reasons.
Angela Merkel.
Yes,
she is not
right.
Theresa May.
Angela Merkel.
I'm sorry about that. Historical and otherwise, mm-hmm. she knew what she was doing, and she became a great heroine as far as I'm concerned. But she still has to deal with that group in her country.
Yes, she does.
That's not happy about seeing Muslim headdress on the street.
But isn't that why this is so dangerous for Donald Trump to do what he did? It's not only bad in this country, but when you have, you know, Angela Merkel has enough of her own challenges without him stirring this issue up about Muslims. Theresa May, they have enough of their own challenges without further stirring this issue up about Muslims. Doesn't that create deeper problems in both those countries?
But Theresa, I'm sure you know the answer to that question, which is he doesn't give a damn about his personal responsibilities. The only thing he cares about is whether he's personally advancing himself.
He's not a statesman in this case because he undermines the allies,
But this is happening in the backdrop of North Korea launch another missile launch.
Right.
What was going on in the UN yesterday? You know, they were having a debate about how to respond to the latest missile launch, which this one clearly could make it, by all accounts, you know, well deep into the U.S. and maybe to Washington. And so we, the U.S., are in a debate at the U.N. Trying to get everyone to join us in pushing back against North Korea. At the same time, the President of the United States is doing something to make it more difficult for our allies in their own countries.
Yes.
Those two things interact.
Yes, but again, I want to return to my basic premise. He doesn't give a damn about anything except himself.
But we need to. It's a problem.
Well, we know that, and that's why we have this program, and that's why you're saying what you're saying. I'm just saying it would be naive on all our parts to not understand who this megalomaniacal guy is and what he's doing and why he and narcissistic and what he's doing.
We have to take a break, but two things. One is we just got word that John Conyers, who is under fire for accusations of sexual harassment, is in the hospital and has been hospitalized. So we're following that story and finding out what is going on there. Meanwhile, just on this story, I just don't want to let this go before we move on, but the Sarah Huckabee Sanders' explanation yesterday of the video was one of the most jaw-dropping things. I have admitted on this program before, and I apologize for admitting it, but I watch that briefing every day. I can't take my eyes off of it, and I'm seeking therapy to try to change that. But there is she said, now meanwhile, so you have this far right, as you said, you have this far right anti-Muslim group who put these videos out. They remain unverified. According to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, that's beside the point. Whether it is a real video, the threat is real. That is what the president is talking about. That is what the president is focused on, is dealing with those real threats, and those are real no matter how you look at it. When pressed on the difference between the videos being real or fake, Sanders replied, "I'm not talking about the nature of the video. I think you're focusing on the wrong thing. The threat is real, and that's what the president is talking about." Yes, she really said that. The official spokeswoman for the President of the United States said that whether the videos depicting violence committed by Muslims are actually real is beside the point.
Well, I mean, it's so shocking for her to say that. One of the videos is from Arab Spring, apparently, years old, out of Egypt. The other one is from inside Syria. So they're out of context. They have no meaning. They don't speak to any behavior of people in the Western world at all. in the context of an attack by a Muslim on a Christian. It's all made up. It's all crazy, out of context, just with the idea to stir up Islamophobic, xenophobic messages of hatred.
Among who? Among the 36%, and there are a lot of people there, and those are the people, right, Vera, who got him elected president this time and who he will continually go to.
Yeah, but what about the damage that's being done across the world?
He doesn't give a damn.
I keep telling you that. I don't care about that. I care about, but there still is damage being done.
And I don't understand how Huckabee Sanders looks in the mirror every day.
Oh, well.
That is unbelievable.
Now you got the essential Shartok point about some of these characters who are taking, as Teresa has always told us, taking away children's health care and doing things like that. How do they look in the mirror?
But there's a certain responsibility that comes with holding the job of standing before the podium in the White House press briefing room.
Well, I agree with you, but easy for you to say. He doesn't see the world the way you do.
She is demeaning the presidency.
Yes, that's true.
It's demeaning, and it is dangerous to our allies, and it is we have, it's not fair to our soldiers in Afghanistan. It's not fair to our soldiers in the Middle East. This is dangerous. Vera could speak to this in a more informed way than me, but when you...
But you'll have to wait till after a break. Go ahead.
Do you need me to stop talking?
No, you
now?
Can talk for one more second, then we have to take
but
a break. I'm sorry.
When you stir hatred, when you send out false information that festers hatred in the Muslim community, you are creating problems around the world that have serious, dangerous consequences. He owes the military an apology. She owes the military an apology. This is dangerous.
Oh, pause there. We'll return. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. A couple letters, and then we'll move on to talk about taxes and the tax plan and that. It's fate. It's fate. Go ahead.
Feta. Okay, so here we go. Gene says, "Who benefits?" Who benefits from Trump's behavior? Trump with his base, Putin internationally. And then Jeff says, Trump's tweets are all about distraction. If he has us talking about Britain, Muslim videos, football players, Pocahontas, and LeVar Ball, we're not picking apart his awful tax bill. I agree with
that. Well, he is redirecting. That is for sure. That seems to be a strategy, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we need to pay attention to the details of this tax bill because they're going to try to pass it today in the Senate.
Yep.
You know, 20 hours debate, no hearings, and
Votorama.
Votorama today, yes.
And listen to what Rubio said. Senator Rubio said yesterday at a Politico breakfast or lunch, whatever it was, event. He said, you know, they're asking, how does this all add up? Well, he said, just remember, the tax bill is just a component of it, that we're going to need to deal with Medicare and Social Security when we come back next year.
Yeah.
He said what everyone thinks, but no one's been willing to say. And
seniors better watch out.
Right. And this was a story this morning from NPR about the farming community. While they say, well, there's some provisions in this tax bill that are good for them, what they see the implications of it, it's going to require, you know, that's going to explode the deficits. And then when the farm bill comes up next year, they're going to have deep, deep program cuts in farm programs because they're going to say we can't afford it because the deficits have there's no money.
The deficit is there because we gave away the store to the people with the most.
To the top 1%. This is all, and you know, we've gotten letters and such saying, oh, you know, you're just left-wing taking, cherry-picking what's in it.
But if
University of Chicago did a survey of the top 45 economists around the country. Did they think that this would hit the growth numbers? You know, what did they think about the tax bill? All but one of them thought that overall this was going to be bad for the economy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so George says, Professor Allen, it may only be because it's my ox, this Green Guard, this time, but this is just beginning to feel to me the sexual harassment.
Oh, you read that?
No, I read it to you guys. I don't think I read it out loud, did I?
I thought you just read it.
No, in any case, okay, all right, I'll defer to you.
Well, that's okay, that's fine.
I'll defer to you. Russ says, big liars. In a country with 1,322 Superfund sites where the Republican choir continually sings the phrase job-killing regulation, and in a country spending $100 billion a year on weather disasters where the president parrots the phrase clean coal, I see no need to outsource malicious propaganda. The president, however, needed to import inflammatory anti-Muslim vitriol from across the Atlantic. I'm hoping someday that the name Trump will be linked to in popular opinion with the adjective un-American. Russ from Anans. And Mike says, as the father of a daughter, I'm very happy to see this reckoning against sexual harassment, but I can't help but notice the huge difference but in the private and public sector. Mm-hmm. In the private sector, there's been no hesitation to admonish and fire. But all politicians seem to go with half apologies of denial and their colleagues circle the wagon. Very disappointing, maybe even disgusting.
That needs to change. Absolutely. I mean, it's something else. You know, apparently Al Franken, somebody else came forward today accusing him of groping.
Let me ask you a question.
So he's got to go. They have to go.
I haven't heard the newest, but I do think that, yeah, I don't know.
So let me ask you a question, Vera. And you work in a sheltered place, a university.
How is that sheltered?
Well, I'm asking that question.
Oh.
Is it or isn't it?
No. It depends on where, what university you work at, and what kind of a department. It really depends who your colleagues are, if you're sheltered or not.
And your president of your college is, and other people?
So in my environment, it's been good. But I'm just saying, I don't think
asking.
An environment, I think at Siena College, in my department, it's been great. My male colleagues have been extremely supportive and kind and thoughtful, and they're good human beings. So they behave in appropriate ways towards
each
other.
But I don't think that that's the case everywhere.
No,
that's why I think we need to, again, I'm going to become a broken record. I think we need to have forums, discussions. I think if next year when people do their leadership retreats, they need to add in a discussion about this. I think, you know, you'd hope that chambers of commerce, Rotary clubs, all of those kinds of groups would put together forums and discussions about what to do about this, how to change the culture, what are the rules of the road, how can you support people, how can you,
Well, you know what? This needs leaders like you to do it. I mean, somebody's got to do it, and I know that you have the stuff to be able to.
I've been doing I've had three conversations this week. I've been just trying. I have no standing in this, but just meeting with people who put together events, who have forums, who have and to say, okay, in the next year, can you in your lineup of events that you do, can you add an event bringing in experts to talk about this issue? Because if we're going to change, we have to keep the conversation going. We've got to talk about it in February, March, April, all through next year.
And Congress only offering now as a new idea sexual harassment training, I don't think that's sufficient. That's three decades behind.
Well, they did pass a sense of the Congress resolution on the House side, and at least, you know, that's a step. There's a lot more that needs to be done, but in my view, baby steps, but at least applaud that one.
Okay. Keeler charges, says Chris from Albany. A good rule of thumb for judging an argument is to assume a basic sense of self-preservation and self-interest on the part of the people involved. If Minnesota Public Radio is canning a guy who makes them scads of money, there's probably a good reason, and it's not just back rubs.
Yep.
That was my thought when I read about it also.
Well, yes, and even mine. But I have to say, innocent until proven guilty. I mean, you know, I think that the big mistake on Minnesota Public Radio is that they have not explained to their audience why this was necessary.
Right.
Yeah. So Peter says, while the writer's almanac was well done, let's not pretend for a moment that Garrison Keillor is the only person capable of sharing great writing with a radio audience. There are others out there, and I hope WAMC and the NPR community finds one, and that's Peter from New Marlboro. And Lillian said, well, Joe could do it. That's the first thing I thought
awesome.
Of today. We could syndicate Joe doing this.
I want my job. I like this job.
No, no.
You keep this. You're not firing me.
Syndicate your awesome interviews.
Yeah. just
No.
But still at a job.
But
that's all right.
No, you're awesome at this.
No, you'll have a job as long as I'm breathing. Lillian says, it is easy to believe the accusations against people we don't like, Trump, Moore, and even Matt Lauer. is much harder to believe them against people we truly admire. I truly drove off the road when I heard the report yesterday. I feel betrayed by Garrison Keillor. I will miss the Writer's Almanac, and all my childhood memories of Saturday nights feels tainted.
It was just a wonderful moment where Alan said, you'll have a job here as long as I'm breathing. And I just look over, and Ray Graff just picks up his wrist, looks at his watch, and looks down again.
Meaning he thinks I'm dying, right? That's what Ray Graff thinks.
Maybe. Well,
so just to be clear, you weren't laughing about
Matt
Lauer.
I was laughing at Ray. No. Thank you, Teresa. Yes,
and
exactly.
Did I miss something here?
No. I just wanted to say to Lillian, because she obviously said she almost drove off the road. You know, it's really shocking when you think you know a personality on the radio or on a TV show, and that person turns out to be a complete jerk.
Different as you know, as advertised.
Yeah,
perhaps.
And so I mean, this is the reality. We now find out that there's more to people, and it's shocking indeed sometimes. And sometimes it's not surprising, actually.
Because
we have had our own experiences with people that. Presented themselves publicly in a certain way, and then it turns out to be quite different when you interact with them on a personal level.
And Jennifer says, "Dear panel, does everyone realize how unsafe women feel right now? I'm really sad to hear our listening community care more about hearing a program than moral character and the victims, Jen in Chatham," and that's the letters we have right now.
Excellent. Let's take a break. Ray, what time is it? Excellent. We'll
Shartok
be back
time.
Right. Shartok.
Oh man, Shartok time.
Bum, ba-da-dum. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable and our panel discussion this morning, 6 minutes past 10 o'clock, and we are glad you are with us. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org, and you can share your letters with us. So I want to go back to the tax bill and where we are on this. The Senate GOP clears one hurdle on the tax bill, moving closer to a final vote. And this massive tax bill cleared a procedural hurdle in the Senate on Wednesday as lawmakers.
Well, maybe they're lawmakers today with the Rotorama.
Sounds like a great drink.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good point. 52-48 to move the legislation forward toward a showdown vote on final passage by the end of the week. The party line vote was an important victory for Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and President Trump, signaling support and momentum for the legislation that overhauls the tax code for the first time in 3 decades while delivering enormous cuts to corporations and the wealthy. I will cut to the chase. Is there anyone in this room who does not believe this bill will pass? Okay.
I have believed and have said, been saying so for days, that something will pass. That's what they need. They need a something. And they don't particularly care what that something is, although their sponsors do. The people who are giving them the money and buying their votes want to make sure that they're getting their money's worth. And they have made that very clear. And we've been hearing from people like Chris Collins out in Buffalo that his donors are unhappy. I mean, he's saying the unsayable. And we know that that this is the case. I do think there's a very good chance something is going to, and we don't even have the slightest idea what the consequences are going to be. So, for example, Teresa has been warning us all along about things like medical deductibility Somebody's in a nursing home, they run out of money, or they have money. Will they be allowed to deduct it? No, they won't. Will college people be able to deduct their interest? No, they won't.
And yesterday we asked, I asked people as homework to write in and tell their stories, and thank you for all those who did. And over again, we got the story about the college, if you're a graduate student, and the tax that you're going to have to pay, or if you're a teacher, the tax you're going to have to pay, because you're going to lose these deductions. And they say, well, you get $12,000. Well, it's far beyond the costs far exceed that. It's an attack. This bill is an attack on education.
Go back, if you will, Teresa, because there'll be somebody who missed it. About the graduate student's issue. Could you explain that one more time?
Do you want to do that? So if you're a graduate student and you are you might get paid $10,000, but your package is valued at $60,000.
Right.
So you have to now, under this Republican bill, you're going to have to pay taxes on the $60,000 value, even though you never get paid that. So that's going to...
In other words, if you have a grant
income,
or something
right.
like that.
Yeah. So it's considered income, and you're going to have to pay taxes on it. So we in this country, what creates jobs, what creates the next thing is higher education. You need to drive innovation and to make it harder for people to go to college, to make it more expensive, to create more barriers for people to go to college. That's what this tax bill is going to do. It's going to create more barriers to education. It's going to create more burdens on our teachers. And why? So that you can give tax breaks to the top 1%. And so you can give these new provisions to corporations. And Donald Trump yesterday, at his speech, he says, well, there's all this money offshore, and now it's going to come pouring back in. It's going to be invested in jobs and such. But the Wall Street Journal had a piece yesterday. They polled top CEOs, top corporations, and they said, no, that's not what we're going to do with the money.
They're either going to tuck it away for rainy days or they invested in technology to lay off more people.
Right. So, and look at what Marco Rubio said yesterday. I'm repeating myself, but he says, this is just a piece of it. The tax bill is just a piece of our overall plan, because we know that these numbers don't add up within the tax bill. So to make them add up, we're going to do other things. What did Donald Trump talk about yesterday? The next thing we're going to do is welfare. We're going to cut welfare. We're going to cut Medicare. We're going to cut Medicaid. We're going to go after entitlement programs to make this add up. That's how it's all going to add up.
I think I'm really concerned about how seniors will experience this kind of a cutback on entitlements in the next few years. Because as soon as the issue comes up with, how are we going to cover this growing national debt, then the attack will follow on all kinds of welfare-related programs, Social Security, and so on. And that is the most devastating thing for our seniors and also for the young people who will pursue education.
And I agree that it will pass the Senate. I think that they're going to be able to push it through. I mean, imagine, there have been no hearings on this bill, 20 hours of debate. Much of that's going to be the so-called Votorama that's going to happen today and tomorrow. So this really, it's going to be... intended consequences and a lot of unintended consequences. But I'm not so sure once the House and Senate sit down together, are they going to be able to move this fast enough to get it through? That's the trick. If they can move it fast enough so people don't have an understanding of the implications of it, then maybe they can get it to final passage, and certainly the president will sign it. He's clearly trying to get something to his desk before the end of the year.
Yeah.
But, but they still have this budget bill looming. And, that's one of the things. Think about all the things that Donald Trump was tweeting about yesterday. He's not, not focused on the budget bill. And what do they have tucked into this budget bill? And how do you deal with this? This is arcane, but a PAYGO provision. Alan, you may have talked about this already. There's a provision that if you don't meet the spending targets, it targets automatic cuts in the PAYGO provisions in this tax bill. And what do the Republicans say about that? Oh, well, the Democrats are never going to approve a waiver down the road. They're going to never let those PAYGO provisions kick in, meaning automatic cuts in programs if you don't meet targets. Well, we'll see.
I just want to mention, it occurs to me to tell you all about the WAMC app, which we're all so proud of, where you can go to WAMC, get the app. You can listen to this anywhere in the world, if you would want to. But in addition to that, you can see this panel at any point you want to on your handheld device. You can watch this panel and you can see what we all look like, and you can be, at least in my case, disappointed.
Yeah,
just listen.
Just listen.
But Alan, how are they going to make this set up? So you have Corker that says, Senator Corker says, I'll be for it if we have the so-called trigger. The trigger is that if you don't get the revenues of after a certain amount of time, then it changes the tax cuts.
Yeah, well.
And then other people say, I won't vote for it if it has a trigger in it.
Well, the way that that's going to work, Teresa, is that they're a bunch of liars. So, in other words, they're saying, we're not going to vote for this unless you give us this, this, or this. Now, you can't, as you have pointed out, and as we've all pointed out, you can't reconcile both sides. You can't say to the moderates, okay, we'll give you this, and to the conservatives, we'll take this out, because it won't add up.
So, some people say, I'm only for it if the health care mandate, you know, if you end the Affordable Care Act, and others people say, I will only vote for it if you don't end the Affordable Care Act.
So are you a phony or not is the point. Right. Not you, Teresa, but the senators, phonies here in that they want to vote for the bill, they're afraid of the consequences, but in the end, you and I have the same feeling, I think, which is they're going to vote for it.
But also, I said, I'm not much for polls, but polling yesterday showed overall the country's not for this bill, and for what they know mm-hmm. about it, and even Republican support for the bill is going down. That's why I think they're trying to jam it through as fast as possible, because the more people learn about it, the more troubling it is. And you had Donald Trump yesterday in Missouri get up there and say, this bill won't benefit me. It's going to be a hit on me because all I care about is you, the working class.
Okay.
Total lie.
So could we please have a look at your taxes, Mr. Trump? Could we please have a look at your taxes so we know, because we know he's lying. The mm-hmm. question is, so the American people know that. He's not giving you his taxes for a reason, and we know that.
Well, we know that if the estate tax provisions go through repealing the estate tax, that will benefit him dramatically.
Absolutely.
In the hundreds of millions of dollars. And we know that the alternative minimum tax, which he has complained about profusely in the little bit of tax documents that has been seen on, they've calculated that that's, what, a $30 million benefit. I can't remember if that's exact number, but we know if they eliminate the alternative minimum tax.
And we know, and I hate to do this because it's going to seem self-serving, the charities in the United States are really in for a rough time. If you believe in if you believe in any one of the great agencies that raise money in this country, and they raise it because, frankly, people want that deduction often, not always, but often. So you look at public television, you look at public radio, you look at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, you look at the Metropolitan Opera. All of them are going to get killed under this thing.
Yeah,
I mean killed.
It's worrisome, that's for sure.
And while we're talking about charities, let's remember that Donald Trump, people say, well, what about the Clinton Foundation? He denigrated the swift boat of the Clinton Foundation. Well, Charity Navigator and the three other top rating mm-hmm. groups have rated the Clinton Foundation, given them the highest rating. And the Trump Foundation, which we remember is not funded by him, it's funded by others, is under investigation and reportedly being shut down. So,
let's go to some letters, and then we will. Are these done? Yeah.
I don't know. I think so.
Let me check.
Okay. Janice says, tax bill. How about the repeal of the Johnson Amendment buried in this bill?
Oh.
The Johnson Amendment. Somebody remember that one?
All right, we'll do our homework.
I think I know what it is, but I don't want to say the wrong thing. I can't remember if it's the shipping or the life amendment. Let me double check.
Okay. In the meantime, if it passes the Senate, it still needs to go to conference. You said that, Teresa. Does
right.
this panel think the House will just simply substitute and pass the Senate bill? Or could conferencing end up killing this bill? That's from our friend John in Half Moon. The answer, John, is yes, it could kill the bill. But it won't, because this House of Representatives has basically been docile and going along with whatever they've been sent. And that's because the House of Representatives is nothing more than an oligarchy, which is ruled by one guy, Ryan sitting at the top, and everybody else is dutifully marching along.
Well, the thing about the House, though, and I'll get to the I wanted to be sure I remembered what the Johnson Amendment was, but the House is, you know, he has to deal with the so-called Freedom Caucus, the far-right mm-hmm. conservative groups who are supposedly deficit hawks. So how do you pass a bill that the Freedom Caucus says is okay, that also Senator Collins and Corker and others say it's okay? I mean, how do you reconcile that?
It's easy. You just do it. You do it because you want to do it.
And the numbers don't add up.
Yeah. They don't care.
The Johnson Amendment is the tax code provision that says nonprofit organizations from endorsing or opposing political candidates. Mm-hmm. That's the religious, the churches that can do politics in church. Mm-hmm.
Kathy says, loss of personal exemptions. The loss of personal exemptions largely offsets the benefit of the increased standard deduction and increases taxable income for families with about 2 to 3 children.
Yeah, and also we had an interesting letter yesterday about a person that has a very small business run out of the house, and they said, you know, the deductibility for that business far exceeds the $12,000, so they're going to be hurt. They don't even know if they're going to be able to sustain their small business. Mm.
And Deborah says, tax plan, I've heard lots about the elimination of deductions for individuals in the GOP tax plan. Does the plan include elimination of any significant deductions for corporations? Perhaps that topic could be researched and addressed, something new to discuss. And that's from Deb.
So one of those issues that people are talking a lot about is moving expenses. So if a company closes and that company moves to another state or overseas, they can still deduct their company's moving expenses. If that company closes and employees who are laid off need to move somewhere else to get a job, those individuals will no longer be able to deduct their moving expenses. So there's an example of the inequity.
Okay, good morning. We're a family that will seemingly benefit from the tax bill. The costs to our country are just not worth it. Please take my tax money, David.
Well, that reminds me, and I've talked about it before, there's a group called Responsible Wealth, and they have, in today's USA Today, there's Disney, I'm blanking on her first name, but she has an op-ed in USA Today. These are a group of wealthy Americans who have jointly signed a letter that says that even though they are in the short term going to benefit economically if this tax bill passes, they are against it because they think overall that that increasing income inequality is not good for them, that cuts in education and workforce supports are not good for them and their business. And this includes, a lot of former CEO of American Airlines, others who just say that while they personally will benefit, the country will not, so they don't think it's in their economic interest.
Victoria writes to us in Leverett, we know Trump doesn't care. Many believe he is incompetent and dangerous. I live in Massachusetts, so no need to contact McGovern, Warren, Markey. How do we, the people, impact Congress, people who we don't elect? All practical advice appreciated. Well, Victoria, Teresa, in her own magnificent way, answered that question just yesterday. First of all, it's very important that you do write to your people who agree with you, who you agree with, so that they'll know that you're behind them. Second of all, likewise, even though a lot of people reject voters from out of their districts, they listen. There's an ear for national popularity. Some of them want to run for president at some point. They don't want you, on the other side of this. And then finally, I would tell you the most read part of the newspapers is often the letters to the editor. And I would be sitting there at your typewriter writing letters to everybody in other states and making sense, because those are things that are certainly read by the by the politicians.
And help educate your friends and others in your community about the impact of these bills.
Jeremy, Alan, everything you've said on the show is right, but what can we do? When we stop waiting for Washington to fix Washington, when do we rise? And that's from Jeremy. You know, there are a lot of people talking about that and talking about when do we get out in the streets? I understand there's another Women's March being scheduled right now. I don't actually have the – we were at the last one, but I think those are important. Anthony says, panel, I've said it before, with the largest body of people, the baby boomers, all headed to for Social Security, the current administration wants out of the cost, and that's from Anthony.
Excellent. Any final words? Because we're out of time.
Just
checking.
No.
Okay. Excellent. Teresa, thank you very much. Vera, always a pleasure. Thank you. Alan,
what fresh hell?
We'll find out in a minute, I'm sure. Yeah. We'll be right back after this.